I picked that song for you, Doug. That's Michael Jackson.
Yeah,
stop,
I was afraid
pressuring
you
me. Stop pressuring me.
And there's so many ways to interpret that with you.
We are in studio with the wonderful Doug Spearman, writer, director, actor, one of the co-founders of Equality California with me way yes. back when the dinosaurs roamed the earth.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
John Bozeman is still with us from Truth Wins
Hi,
Out.
Hi.
Yeah.
Sorry.
But Doug, you and I, this, let me tell the audience how this started. I saw Last Black Man in San Francisco a couple of weeks ago. You saw Last Black Man in San Francisco, right? It's a story mm-hmm. about the gentrification of San Francisco with a lot of families being displaced by techno industry and wealthy
You and I
people.
Have a completely different
and that's exactly,
take on, like, that is not what this movie's about.
That is what I got from it. It's about gentrification of neighborhoods.
Dude,
displacing
really?
Displacing families. Yeah.
No, it's a fairy tale.
You're on the air. Let's go.
Okay, so the last black, being a black man who's been to San Francisco and actually took part in a boycott up there.
Yeah.
That movie isn't about gentrification. It's about someone being so damaged by the world that he was raised in as a black man in San Francisco, ghettoized, that he is trapped himself in this fantasy of a house that never really belonged to him.
Got
that
it.
He takes on himself, but it's literally about the fact that it's a fairy tale, John.
Huh.
I mean, it's mythology.
Oh, that's really good. See, this is interesting because I, of course, was looking through the political lens of
I am
the
looking
politics.
Through it through the political
you
lens.
You are too.
Yeah.
But based on your experiences as a black man.
Yeah, but it's interesting because the two leads are,
all the leads are black.
Yeah. No, not all the characters. All the leads are black.
All the leads are black.
But
yeah.
you didn't mention that at all when you started talking about the movie.
That all the leads are black?
Or that that this was about a black man, two black men, and one of them's journey.
Yeah. No, I saw it about gentrification and power.
Wow, okay. As yeah. you do, because you're a politician.
I'm a politician. That's yeah. how I looked at it. But
and really non-racial.
Yeah.
In a great way. And I can say that because
yeah.
I've known you forever.
20-some years.
Shut up.
20-some years.
Stop saying that.
20-some years.
Again, he said
yeah.
it.
And often I'm the brown man. You and I are the only black and brown in the room.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I know.
Oh, yeah.
I know. And we were talking about how we get portrayed in film. So between the Frito Bandito and Speedy Gonzalez. That's
oh,
what
my God. I forgot about the Frito Bandito.
Those are my images as a child. Frito Bandito, the big guy. Yep, and little Speedy Gonzalez. So I'm like, well, there's my ethnicity on the cartoon. Wow.
Wow. Well, I mean, growing up for me, I mean, we're, I think, the same age.
47?
Yeah.
Okay.
In Grindr years.
Exactly. Okay. I upped it to 49 on Grindr because it had to be plausible.
What's Grindr years? Am I missing out on something?
Grindr years is the posted age as opposed to your real age.
Right. Okay. But is there like an equation that I must be plugging into mine I'm missing?
No. You're
young.
Totally
you're,
too old.
You're
too young
you're
to
too
even
young.
Think about
you don't
this,
need
okay?
To do it.
That's all I wanted. I wanted to
The grown ups are talking, honey. So just sit there and make a Lego
I'll sit back
block.
And sip on my bottle.
Okay.
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 All right. We're about the same age.
Okay. Anyway, so we're about the same age. So I remember, like, from, yeah, you're right. There was only Speedy Gonzalez and Frito Bandito. But for me, at least I had, like, Greg Morris on Mission Impossible. Who was the smart tech guy.
He was hot. Too.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, John.
What? Just, he was hot. He was very sexually attractive.
You're sexually attracted to the microphone right now. Okay. So can we just move on?
Yes, we'll move on.
Okay. Right. So I come at this from a different perspective. I mean, like, I'm a filmmaker right. and an actor. And I only did this, believe it or not, because when I was 12, I was watching the Tonys laying on the floor in the living room, and Ben Vereen won a Tony for Pippin. And I did not know that somebody who looked like me could do that and then do it on television. Because I almost never saw it. I mean, I think you rarely saw Sammy Davis Jr.
At the Tonys, I don't think I recall ever seeing black people up on stage at the Tonys. The Oscars, yes.
Okay.
The Emmys, yes.
Yeah.
The Tonys.
Well, that's why it was really rare because I know Porgy won for Best Musical 1 year, and that's an all-black musical. Two Gentlemen from Verona, the musical, had a black actor in it, and then there was Pippin, and he played lead character. Mm-hmm. Ben Vereen played lead character. But it's because I had to see somebody do it. And as a filmmaker, I believe, and anybody that deals with the moving image, it's the largest cultural canvas we have.
Right.
If you don't appear there, it's almost like you don't exist, which is why we fight for storylines for people who look and are like me, and you, and you. And I get very concerned. I got really concerned after coming out of, first of all, it's a hard movie to watch as a black person, the last black man in Chicago, in San Francisco. And
you were the last black man in Chicago.
No.
There are lots. Barack Obama for openers. Okay. Go ahead.
Chicago had a black mayor, too. Don't forget that in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You made me forget what I was saying.
You walked out of the theater.
So I walked out of there, and I realized that Brad Pitt's company, Plan B, produced that movie.
Right.
Made it possible. All right. And I realized, because I follow these things, because there's so few black independent films that get critical and audience love, I realized that Brad Pitt's company had produced all of them. Moonlight, 12 Years a Slave, Selma.
I love Moonlight.
And I even know the name Selma of the woman too. Who's the producer under Brad that did that. And I thought, okay, these movies are, and I noticed this way back with Precious.
Another great
also
movie.
A difficult film to watch if you're black. Because it makes you so naked in front of people who aren't black. Because the stories are so inside, and being black can be so internal that, I mean, you're never without your racial identity in this country if you look like me, ever.
And, true.
You know, black for me,
I get called
gay.
Tan all the time.
I know.
When I'm actually Mexican. Well, I get called tan.
But Mexicans, just like black people, come in every shade from white to dark, dark.
Moreno to güero, we call them.
Okay.
Güero being light skin, moreno being dark skin.
Yeah, I speak that much Spanish.
I wouldn't
Spanish.
Sure if you spoke enough Spanish.
But do you understand what I mean? So,
I do.
So when you see a movie like that, it's so raw. All of those movies are raw. And it's only because they're so grounded in the flagellating of black men. And, you know, whether it's a fantasy situation where a guy's trapped in his head, living a past that he didn't have. His grandfather didn't build that house. Or he's literally being flayed like the character in 12 Years a Slave. It's always about the victimization of the black man. And most of the time, it happens because there is some bodily harm, if not death, to a black man that becomes the point of story that comes everything around. Like, all the movies that Plan B has produced have shown black men at their lowest, period. In whatever time period or place they take. And I'm tired of that. And it really bothers me that the most critical movies about black people that's considered what, you know, like upscale black independent film are normally produced by white people, because if they didn't produce them, they probably wouldn't get done. But they're all about the lowest common denominator and the most vulnerable point in a black man's life. And I believe I come from the black middle class. You know, three generations of my family went to college. My dad drove a big American car. Yes, we deal with being black men in this country all the time. But there are other stories you could tell about our lives and about the lives of our mothers and our sisters. Oh, I'm sorry. I get a little heavy-handed and I start pounding on the desk. Sorry, kids. Do you know what I mean? Like just growing up in, like, we went to high school. We had issues. I mean, like, there's a 1990s for black people out there somewhere. Do you know what I mean? I'm working on a movie that is my version of the Ice Storm in the neighborhood that I grew up with, which was all middle and upper middle class black families.
Right.
It's an independent film. Why can't we tell those stories in a way that attracts that kind of attention and money and support?
Maybe it's time. And maybe it's a historical thing. I was born and raised here in Los Angeles, right? The only black people I ever saw, and I was here in Los Angeles, were on TV. Like, when part of L.A. I was raised in, it was all Latino or Jewish. It was the East Side, East L.A. It was all Latino and Jewish. I had no African Americans in my grade school or high school.
That's because they're all living way south on La Brea.
I know. Out in South Central, I know.
This place, please do not, it's economically segregated. Yeah. It's not color segregated in Los Angeles. That's what I
And I think
say.
LA being a horizontal city rather than a vertical city. And
sure.
Vertical cities like Chicago, New York, San Francisco, everybody gets together on the subway, right? You're
right.
Suddenly forced to mingle. In a horizontal city without a public transit that is common for everyone, people end up in their cars isolated. I think that's sure. The difference. But my idea of what black, it was actually defined by what I saw on television. So the Jeffersons, Flip Wilson, Whoopi Goldberg, that was my introduction to what Black in America was about. I had to go the journey later in life. I went to Cal State Long Beach. Show up at Cal State Long Beach, half the student body was black. It was like, oh, okay, we're about to get life lessons right here. But prior to that, it was the media that was delivering messages to me about black lives.
Hello.
I know.
So
I'm agreeing with you, babe.
Yeah, I know. So, you know, yay, thank you, high-fiving you without making noise. Feel free to jump in on this.
Yeah, well, what I was thinking, that was your impression of black culture, but, what do you think it does to see all the crime shows having black people being the criminal? You know, what did that do to you?
With guns.
Well, see,
that's awful.
I was growing up, the black male victim roles didn't exist. First of all, it was the time of Shaft,
Superfly.
There was a whole resurgence in the black hero's journey, the black person's hero's journey through the 70s, 80s. You would never have seen any of these movies.
Right.
I mean, even Roots, which was probably the most watched television program of all time, was about this heroic struggle from this African named Kunta Kinte, who is stolen, and then it rises through 10 generations of his family. I would not have seen, there would never have been a Precious. The closest thing to Precious or something like that would have been Lady Sings the Blues. Mm-hmm. Diana Ross's really excellent biopic of
Billie Holiday.
Yeah. So it was about, the whole phrase of the 70s was black power.
It was. Right.
Black power.
Then what happened to the 90s? Because I feel
we started being the
90s.
One. Well, here's what happened. We became the one white person at the one black person at the all white movie. Mm. If you want to see something, watch any of pretty much any teen get trapped in a house for the weekend movie. There's one black guy.
Yeah.
That's what happened in the 90s. And he gets killed.
But Waylands had a good time with this in Scary Movie. All of the the black guy always gets killed.
Yeah.
They make fun of it.
So they started integrating. And it's funny because my acting teacher was the first person I ever saw take on this role. And it was one of the, I see things, I'm like, ooh, I want to do that. Richard Lawson, who is my friend, my mentor, my acting teacher, he's also in my new movie, was in Poltergeist. Mm-hmm. In the original Poltergeist,
Steven, I don't remember any black.
He was the black guy. He's the black guy, and I remember
watching.
I don't remember
any black guys. Did he die?
No, he didn't.
Oh, okay, well, progress.
So it was about. But when I saw Richard in a major summer blockbuster directed by the most senior director, Steven Spielberg directed that, and suddenly it's legitimate.
Right.
And suddenly, I really do believe that Richard is the one who started that one white guy and a one black guy in a group of white people thing, because he was cast in this role on Poltergeist. And I remember sitting there with my girlfriend.
That's how long ago it was.
What I can do. I want to be the black guy in the white movie because that guy's making a lot of money. And a lot of people are going to go see this movie. And then years later, Richard became my acting teacher, randomly.
Well, there you go. That's ironic.
But that's what happened. The late 80s, 90s, it suddenly became, okay, it suddenly became inclusive, but you needed one.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, we're when we come back from commercial, I want to hear your thoughts on Black Panther. And I'm just going to warn you in advance, I love those guys. I know what you're going to say. You're saying it already, but we're going to commercial break. So you're going to have to think about it for 4 minutes. Thanks for tuning in, guys. We'll be right back on Sidebar with John Duran here on Channel Q.
The new Channel Q.
Yes, Doug Spearman, you are looking at the man in the mirror. I picked that song for you too, babe. Hey, you're lucky I picked the songs that I picked. It could have been Superfly.
He doesn't seem too happy with these songs.
He's rubbing his brow.
Because you're doing the thing that is the reason why I'm sitting here.
I know. Oh, babe.
What do you call it?
I am completely aware of, that's why I picked those two songs. That's why I picked these two songs, because I knew it would get you agitated and excited to talk. Now let's talk about my obsession with the movie Black Panther. Okay. Well, I love Black Panther.
And so did I.
All of the characters were black. Well, most of them. Almost all.
Yeah.
And the leads, both the protagonist and the antagonist, were unbelievably talented. And I love the story.
They are. I worked with Michael B. Jordan when he first started in television. We were both on, I was working for ABC, and he was on All My Children.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Huh. I own a copy. That's how much I love Black Panther.
It's fantastic. It's an iconic movie.
It's an iconic
movie. I look at it this way. I think when you look at like all the Marvel movies, for me, Thor Ragnarok is the best movie. Oh, however, okay.
I almost dropped the F-bomb. Get the censor button ready if he talks about that actor again.
But I think, I really do believe that Black Panther is the most important Marvel film.
Because?
Because that it is set in a world where the hero of the movie who goes through the true hero's journey is a black man.
Right.
He's a superhero. And the cause, the plot, the antagonism between those two characters is completely understandable and justified. And they both work it out the best way they do.
Mm.
And it's, first of all, it's beautiful. It's super empowering.
Mm.
I mean, if you're a black kids now have somebody go, I can be him.
Mm.
Like, he looks like me. I cannot underestimate what it's like to grow up and not see yourself reflected in the true way. I know you understand that from a gay man's perspective.
I do. And a Latino. You understand. And,
yes, you're absolutely right. Until George Lopez, you guys had nothing.
Thank you. Now look, can we just say, you guys have Barack Obama to point at, right? Well, what do I have to point at? Sonia Sotomayor on the Supreme Court,
right,
and a handful of U.S. senators, right?
Okay.
We're not quite there yet. We don't
have a theory about that,
a Latino
too.
From California elected governor or U.S. senator, yet we're half of the state's population. So
I have a theory about that, too.
All right, let's hear it.
And maybe this is a cultural misinterpretation on my part, but I believe that, like, for instance, this is the difference between being black in America and being, I believe, a Mexican in Mexico. Being black in America, after slavery ended, there were no more overlords telling you what you could and could not do, really. You could pretty much do whatever you thought you could, even if it took you out of the place you were born. You had to move to get an education. And there has been, and I come from a people who are what were called strivers, who always, every generation had to be better than the generation before, economically, socially, financially, and in terms of your education. We're constantly expanding upward. And I see that, and there's a long history of that in this country for black people, even though we are definitely had to fight for separate and unequal and still separate and equal, whatever. Do you know what I mean? But when I look at Mexico and its revolutions and its colonialism, I don't believe that, well, let's put it this way. There has been a black middle class in America for a long time. And that has spread its ideas in, you know, in two ways, down and up in this country. I don't get the sense that there has ever been, there's a long history of a Mexican middle class in Mexico, because a lot of it's rural, or it's landowners or people with money.
I have to speak up, but there was in California. I mean, California, no, Arizona, about, New Mexico, Texas, yeah, were yeah, all yeah. Mexico. Well, there were like actual Mexican
I'm talking
ranches.
About Mexican right now. Yeah. There's a big difference between a Mexican where we moved the border, where the U.S. government moved the border
right.
and created the United States out of what had been Mexico.
1919.
Yeah.
New Mexico.
But
you've been to Mexico City, though. I mean, yeah. it's a thriving metropolis.
It is, but yeah. that's not all of Mexico. That's like saying the United States is New York.
Or the United States is Omaha. Very different
it's a
places.
Combo.
Yeah, very different places.
It's always
yeah.
a combo.
Yeah. I I'm trying to be as respectful. Whenever we talk about race, I'm always on pins and needles.
I know,
everybody
right?
is. Everybody is. But
you can be who you need to be.
Oh, no, I'm cool with that. When I look at the African-American experience, from my point of view, and I'm not black, right, and I'm Latino, we've gone from enslavement, from two-fifths of a person. It took two constitutional amendments, a civil war, and 150 years on top of it to elect the first black president. So even though the issue has been resolved generation after generation, it's still not there. It's still not there.
Dude, it is so not there. Wait.
Far away from it.
I had to tell somebody what a lynching was the other day, then I showed him a picture. But well, a friend
the
of
fact that he didn't know may be a good thing, actually. If somebody was ignorant and didn't even know that existed in this country, maybe that's...
Well, it'd be great if it didn't still exist.
Right.
Okay, that's the point.
We don't know our history.
So, no. A friend of mine sent me a video that she took with her cell phone in New York a couple days ago of these two cops shooting a black man when he was face down, and they shot him at close range. Like, the gun was against his shoulder when they shot him. And she's got a clear shot of this. And she's like, oh my God, this country's going to hell. I'm like, honey, it didn't change. Right. It hasn't changed. You know, I mean, the black men get killed on a disproportionate level to everybody else in this country. We are 70% of the U.S. prison system.
Right.
But only 14% of the country is
right.
black.
Yeah.
So, I, you know, whether it was lynchings or being dragged here in chains or, you know, being like my family only moved to New York because the Klan came from my uncle on a Sunday morning.
Mm. In where?
Tupelo, Mississippi. Mm. And he wouldn't get off the sidewalk for a white woman. And they put my uncle in the boxcar as it was moving through Tupelo, and he had the entire wealth of his family, my mom, my grandmother, my dad, his mother. And it was a $20 gold piece.
Right.
They put it in his pocket.
Hence the term the strivers. So the strivers then, his goal then was to make life better for his children and his children's children.
Which he did.
And he did. All right. We're going to go another. Will you stick around?
Sure.
I feel like this is worthy of one more segment before the top of the hour. We may as well keep you here.
Take me, John. Take me.
You know, if I had a dollar for every time, no.
Yeah.
I'd have a dollar.
You'd have a dollar because I never said that before in my life.
All right. Thanks for tuning in to Sidebar with John Duran. Here on Channel Q.
The new Channel Q.